Okay, welcome everyone to this Kingborough Council meeting on Monday the 24th of February, and it's 5:30 p.m. My name's Dean Winter, I'm the Mayor, and I officially declare the meeting open. The audio recording guidelines, in accordance with Council's policy, the audio recording of this council meeting will be recorded and made publicly available on our website. So in accordance with that policy, I ask our general manager to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Confirmed.
So he's confirmed that. The acknowledgement of the traditional owners. I begin tonight by paying our council's respect to the traditional and original custodians of this land, the Muwinina people. I acknowledge the contemporary Tasmanian Aboriginal community who have survived invasion and dispossession and continue to maintain and fight for their identity, culture and Indigenous rights. Attendees this evening is myself, Councillor Winter, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Cordover, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street, Councillor Wass and Councillor Reet. We are expecting Councillor Bastone to be with us shortly. She gave me a call about 10 minutes ago and said she was running a few minutes late. So we won't record her as an apology at this stage. From our staff this evening, we have our General Manager, Gary Arnold, our Deputy General Manager, Tony Ferrier, our Chief Financial Officer, John Breen, our Executive Manager, Governance and Community Services, Daniel Smee, Manager of Environmental Services, John Doole, and Manager of Development Services, Tasha Tyler Moore. Apologies this evening, we have Councillor Flora Fox on a leave of absence and Councillor David Grace is an apology this evening. Confirmation of minutes. Looking for a mover and a seconder that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 3 held on 11 February 2020 be confirmed as a true record. Someone to move and second that. Moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Westwood. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Workshops held since the last council meeting. On the 17th of February, we held a workshop on coastal erosion. Next item is declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest to declare? Or general managers? General manager.
Thank you, Mayor. I declare an interest in the item in the closed session, general manager's performance review.
Thank you for that. No other lights on. For the audio recording, Councillor Bastone has arrived at 5:33 p.m. Transfer of agenda items. Does any councillor wish to discuss moving any agenda item? There are none. So we move to questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question? Good evening.
Good evening, Mrs. Claire Corrigan of Kingston. On the 13th of January, a motion was put stating that there is a commitment of reasonable and adequate funding and resourcing of the climate change plan as a matter of priority for Council in their next budget, and this was carried unanimously. The officer's report attached to the notice for that motion stated that it is estimated that about $300,000 is required to properly resource the Climate Change Action Plan, the Climate Change Adaption Policy, and a categoric follow-up of the declaration of a climate emergency in 2019. So the question is, as part of your commitment to community engagement, would you consider reaching out to the general community via your OWSAY process to see if there is an acceptance of a dedicated rate increase to raise the $300,000, which, if I'm correct, equates to about 1% standalone rate rise?
I think this is on me. Thanks for your question. Look, we have a budget consultation process that we put in place last year, and that's held typically at the once we've held our first budget workshop for all councillors. And at that point, I think the aim this year is to have that open for around 5 weeks. And so any member of the community could put forward suggestions for using the draft budget as a guide to put forward projects or programs or rate rises in that case for consideration by councillors. The intention this year is that after we have that feedback from the community, we will then reconvene a second workshop to look at the feedback that we received from the community. So from my understanding of your question, I think what you're talking about could certainly fit in with that consultation process, and you or any other member of the community would be able to put forward a proposal like that for consideration of councillors.
So just to clarify, you're asking the community to submit a draft budget?
No, the draft budget will go out for consultation. And so the community will be able to see, for example, whether a community member felt that climate change, for example, was adequately resourced. And if you felt that it wasn't adequately resourced, you could put a submission in to council as to why you didn't think it was adequately resourced. And obviously a good to add on to that and to make it a better submission, in my opinion, would be to explain how you pay for it. And I think in your question you've outlined that that's the sort of thing you'd be looking at. So that would be the sort of submission that I think would be valuable and councils would consider as part of the budget process.
So my question's more relating to actually raising the $300,000 through a potential rate rise rather than going through the sort of putting in a submission. Do you feel like you can speak on behalf of all the councillors on whether or not it's a good idea to take that to a vote tonight?
I can't take it to a vote tonight. As I said, we've outlined our budget process, and what you've explained that you want to do fits in with our budget consultation process. You can propose during that budget consultation process that council spends more on climate change initiatives, and you can propose through that process that council raises additional revenue to pay for it. You're perfectly entitled to do that, and the reason we have this consultation process, which has only been around for a couple of years, is for exactly the circumstance that you're outlining.
You don't think it's good to do a fact-finding mission before you get to that point?
No.
And do you speak on behalf of all the councillors when you say that?
No, you've got a question without notice, which you're putting me on the spot, and so obviously I'm speaking on as best I can on behalf of council, but I'm outlining what our budget consultation process is, and I hope I've done that adequately.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Any further questions without notice?
So I'm Greg Simpson, Kingston. Just a simple question. How do I go about finding information on road plans and traffic plans for the Kimberley area, specifically Spring Farm, Whitewater Park and so on? I've contacted the council and haven't had much luck in sourcing any information regarding that.
We don't have our Executive Manager of Engineering here with us this evening, but we can take that on notice and make sure that you get a written response.
Thank you. The traffic plans do exist?
I'll make sure we get the right answer. So we'll put it in notice and we'll make sure we contact you with that answer as well.
Thank you.
Any further questions without notice from councillors? From members of the public, apologies. So the next item is questions on notice from the public. Question one is on Ridgeway Dam from Marcus Higgs. Question two is meetings with the Mayor and Deputy Mayor from Julian Punch. Question three is also from Julian Punch in relation to public information sessions for outstanding building permits. And question four is on Nebraska Beach from Simon Dewhurst, with a response there as well. Next item is questions without notice from councillors. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you very much. Through you, Mayor, I have a question. Well, two questions. The first one is about Love Living Locally, which was, might I say, a terrific event. It was really well attended. It was so positive and uplifting to be there, and congratulations to all involved in organising that. It was simply wonderful. While I was there, a constituent commented to me that whilst there were food vans, there were no local service groups and not-for-profits fundraising with sausage sizzles and coffee tables and the like. So we're thinking now about like Rotary, Kingborough Helping Hands, Lions, those kind of service organisations. My question is there scope to have service clubs and not-for-profits share the space during Love Living Locally with the food vans to sell coffee and drinks and food to help them fundraise for their organisations during that event?
This is me.
Through you, Mayor, the short answer is yes, and certainly in previous iterations of living locally. We have had service clubs involved.
Sorry, just to clarify, that was a yes. Sorry?
Yes.
Great. And they have previously. Great. Thanks very much. My second question, if you'll indulge me, Mayor, is about the Blackmans Bay Progress Association. On the 20th of February, they held a meeting where 40 members and concerned residents voted unanimously to request that, with respect to the blowhole fencing project, that firstly further details be provided, including details, plans and timelines regarding the type and extent of fencing approved for the blowhole reserve, and secondly to put on hold any tendering process until the information is provided and further public consultation is undertaken. My understanding is that the design is being finalised before tender and quotations are being sought in accordance with the council resolution on the matter, and the Mayor has indicated that this process is not being paused. My question is, considering the significant community concerns surrounding the blowhole fence project, will the council be putting the project on hold until further community consultation can arrive at an amicable solution that meets the expectations of local residents? Thanks.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Cordova, I corresponded via email with a representative of the Blackmans Bay Progress Association late this afternoon and gave a commitment that I would follow up with my colleague Paul Donnelly, Council's urban designer, to arrange, although it's unusual, to arrange on this occasion to get a copy of the design for the fence that's proposed at the blowhole area to that Progress Association, and indeed most likely just put on Council's website as well. In answer to your second part of the question, no, it won't be put on hold. Council resolved on the 9th of December to build a fence. The design has progressed. Following that decision, we've progressed with a geotechnical report from Bill Cromer. We expect to have tenders close late this week, and a contract will be awarded and the fence constructed.
Councillor Watts.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I have two questions, and the first one centres around Crescent Drive at Margate. Crescent Drive at Margate was a through road. It's now no longer, and like many of the streets in Kingborough, suffers badly from hoons, particularly at night. I'm wondering whether staff can investigate and provide appropriate signage for Crescent Drive. And Crescent Drive, in three or four locations, virtually opposite on each side of the road, there is an indication that it is a pedestrian walkway and a cyclist walkway, which really, if you follow that, means that there's one lane of traffic only. The verges are overgrown, and any pedestrian or cyclist in that area has no option but to remain on the road or end up in Blackberries. And there is no speed limit. We all know that it's 50 unless posted otherwise. But I think if we had cautioned pedestrians, cyclists or something similar with that, it certainly would appease the local people that live in Crescent Drive. It probably wouldn't do anything to change the offensive behaviour, but at least something can be done. And then I would suggest that if that doesn't settle down, the police be informed to undertake some... What's the word I want? Some action.
Have you taken on notice, Councillor Watts?
Yes, thank you. And my second question, Mayor, also on Love Living Locally, and I'd like to congratulate staff that were there on that day. They did a magnificent job. It was brought to my attention that we may have been operating outside our own council's waste-wise event policy. I understand the food vans were using single plastic use, in sense of knives and forks, and also noticed, or I didn't notice, it was told to me, it was noticed by the community, that UTAS had a stall there and they were using balloons, which we went against balloons, I think, 2 years ago. Got criticised by one local radio station until someone else jumped on the bandwagon and said we made the best decision of any council in the state, and that radio station had to eat humble pie. But I just don't know whether we... And my question really is, do we talk to those that we give, that's the stallholders, do we advise them of our policy and Do we have negotiations with those so that there is no conflict, or did we in fact give special dispensation?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, I can certainly advise that we inform stallholders of Council's waste-wise policy. In relation to the specifics of this question, I'd need to undertake some further investigation as to, I'd be surprised if an exemption was given. So whether it's just a matter of something slipped through or not, I would need to investigate further.
Councillor Bastone.
Thank you. Will the Mayor consider some sort of public acknowledgement of the extraordinary amount of work done by Ms. Wilcox and Paul with the consultation work that they've been doing regarding Silverwater Park and the swimming pool proposal? They've been at every public market, anything in Kingston for the last month on a Saturday or a Sunday.
Thanks for your question. I have thought about this, and I thought about, and I actually spoke to the Deputy Mayor about it this morning. And I actually also spoke to the Mayor of Huon Valley last week about it. Both had a similar situation where we saw something great happening. I'm happy to, on the record, say that the consultation undertaken by those staff has been absolutely phenomenal. And I've told them both that today. But the thing about this is that our staff are doing great things everywhere. And to single out two staff in a public way is a bit unfair, and that's why I didn't proactively do it. I love that someone up at the Works Depot decided this summer that they would start raking the beach before every hot day. And I don't know who that is, but it was brilliant. And it's the best piece of feedback I've got the whole time. There's great things happening all the time. I'd love to acknowledge publicly every person by name, but by virtue of the fact that there's a lot of great things happening, it's hard to do it all the time. But in this case, Silverwater Park consultation has been very, very high quality.
Thank you.
Any other questions without notice from councillors? In that case, questions on notice from councillors. Green waste, question from Councillor Bastone. It was the only question on notice this week. So, the open session now adjourns, and the planning authority will commence at 5:47 p.m. And the first item is the officers' reports to the planning authority. Looking for a mover and a seconder of that motion. Moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Wass. Any comments or questions in relation to this item? Okay, there's no. Last chance. So the motion was that the report be noted. It was moved by Councillor Westwood and seconded by Councillor Wass. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motion is carried unanimously. We move on to, on page 9, there's a DA 2019-190 development application for two multiple dwellings, one existing at 23 Garnett Street, Blackmans Bay, with a recommended motion on page 19. Would anyone like to move the recommended motion? So recommended motion, page 19, moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Reet. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. We have an application before us that recommends approval with conditions. It's a development application for two multiple dwellings, one existing at 23 Garnett Street, Blackmans Bay. I might just note on the record that I really like the format of the new report, and the table is really good. Certainly as someone who's trying to digest the information, it's much easier to do that. In this case, there were 8 objections, and each of those has been addressed in the report. I note that in terms of development, infill development, is preferable to urban sprawl, and it reflects the changing landscape of Blackmans Bay at the moment. We are seeing more infill development, which is, I think, appropriate in this area. We have infrastructure in Blackmans Bay to support infill development, and I'm happy with the recommendation.
No other lights on at the moment. Councillor Midgley, thanks for helping me out.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a few things further to note on this, that in response to the representations received during the exhibition period, all of the existing native vegetation along the rear, eastern side and front boundaries where not within the parking zone is to be retained on site, and a condition has been included in the recommendation for an updated landscaping plan to ensure this. So often we don't see, well, since I've been on council, I can't remember many developers actually listening to representations and actually acting on those, especially when it comes to vegetation. So it's great to see that that is happening. The established vegetation along the northern rear boundary is to be retained to assist in softening and screening the new dwelling from the adjacent neighbour. This is a recommendation to be a condition of any approval. I think it is living in a community that is changing with increased subdivisions, and we do note when we drive through Blackmans Bay that there are many infill developments and many dwellings that do, I guess, overlook. There's some shadowing, there is a loss of privacy and sometimes a loss of view, but again, this is all this has met the requirements of the planning scheme. We are changing. We don't want, I guess we need to look at perhaps a way we can communicate this to the community so we understand that we're not going for urban sprawl, that we are looking at infill development and the benefits of this. The windows and decks met the setback requirements, and I note also that the council's environmental planner has reviewed the application and conducted a site inspection, and there was no significant vegetation identified on the site. There was just a couple of questions that I had, or just if I could just get some clarification in regards to the, sorry, look at my notes, the bedroom window of the existing dwelling located along the southern elevation and adjacent to the visitor parking space must be separated by a screen of at least 1.7 metres in height, or have a sill height of at least 1.7 metres. If I could just get an explanation of what that separated by a screen means, please.
Ms. Tollamore.
Through you, Mayor, that's a requirement of the planning scheme, obviously. It's to protect the amenity of the residents in that dwelling from vehicular noise and lights. So the screen, they often use merbau, slatting, or some other sort of powder-coated aluminium slatting or something like that. It's their choice what they do, so long as it's a screen to serve that purpose.
Thank you.
Councillor Bastow.
Thank you. I also find this a really great way of having it set out so we can whiz our little fingers down and work out what's right and what complies. So thank you very much for doing that. I have a question on page 24, the site coverage, private open space, which I probably wouldn't have picked up if it hadn't have been set out this way. The second A1 down, B, private open space complies, but then when we get to A2, area of private open space, it says it doesn't comply. So I was just wondering if we could have some clarification of the two different sorts of public open or private open space there.
Ms. Tollamore.
Through you, Mayor, the A1B, these aren't written in full because if we write them in full, the table is enormous, so they are abbreviated parts of the scheme. The open space includes their front and backyards or other areas, and then the A2 is very specific. It talks about 24 metres squared in area and must have a minimum width of 4 metres, and then there's other requirements like has to be accessible from a habitable room, and then its orientation, so it's not sitting on the south, sitting in the dark, and a gradient requirement as well. So it's just more specific to the actual usable part of your backyard where you have your barbecue or other activities.
Thank you.
Councillor Reid.
Thank you. I'm pleased to see that the previous wording in relation to retaining landscape plans for the life of it, well, basically forever that the development exists, have been changed significantly. But I did just want to query point four, because we have a new set of words now, and it says the landscaping shown on the endorsed landscape plan must be completed to the satisfaction of the council prior to the occupation of the new dwelling. And it's the time frame that's given there, and I think I believe in the discussions that we had several weeks ago about this, we did talk about whether it is acceptable or not to put the onus on somebody to have landscaping done prior to occupation, because building is a very expensive thing, and quite often people can't afford to do it straight away, and they might, you know, get in there and then do the garden as their next project once they're settled. So I'm a little bit nervous. I think we've come a long way in the wording, but we're now putting timeframes on that, which, you know, and this has no wriggle room. This says it's got to be done to the satisfaction of council before they occupy it. We didn't actually have that provision in before, so we've exchanged one set of words for another. So I'd be interested in some response about that.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the previous approvals that we have had did include prior to occupation the timing requirement. Typically what would occur is that the developer has to do the landscaping. So they're selling the product, they're required to do the driveways, the letterboxes, the landscaping, the houses, the screens or whatever else is in there. It's part of their package and part of their project to do it, so it's delivered, so therefore that onus doesn't get put on to the new owner, because very typically it's sold. It's not necessarily owner-occupied when we come to multi-dwelling developments. Single-property dwelling developments is a little bit different. They're more likely to do their own landscaping. But this ensures that it's in to start with, so they don't move in, busy moving into a new house, don't do their landscaping at all and becomes an encumbrance on them. It's much better to have it in to start with and be presented properly so that we get a good outcome for our streetscapes and for the future occupants. And also the properties may be rented out, meaning that they're not owner-occupiers, which we have a lot of instances of.
Okay, so just to clarify, does that mean if I was to build a house somewhere, and because it was only a single dwelling, that I wouldn't see a provision in there that I had to do my landscaping plans prior to occupying the building?
Ms. Tylermore.
Through you, Mayor. It depends on what the reason for the landscaping is. If it's to provide screening because you've asked for a reduced setback and you're closer to your neighbours and we've deemed it appropriate to have landscaping, then yes, it would be required to be installed prior to occupation. Or if there was some other requirement as to why we ask for landscaping, it's not very often we ask for landscaping plans for single dwellings on an ordinary house block.
Thank you.
Yeah, I echo the sentiments about the report format. I know there's already been changes, but maybe there's been more changes, but the report was particularly easy to get through. That makes, hopefully, particularly when we get more complicated DAs, and there are a lot more than this at times, it'll make it much easier with this format. I noticed there were an abnormal amount of representations, and that's why we're dealing with it at the planning authority and it's not done under delegation. One of them was around the desired future character statement, which remains that Blackens Bay should continue as a predominantly low density residential area with large lot sizes. And I can see why someone in the community would raise that as a concern, because one of the speakers talked about infill being important, but that we've got a desired future or a local area objective and a desired future character statement that says the opposite, really. It says that predominantly low density residential. I'm just wondering, as a fairly broad question, how much does that desired future character statement have any weight? Hypothetically, council be able to refuse an application because it didn't meet the desired future character statement?
in response to you, Mayor, the local area objectives and desired future character statements are in the scheme and do provide generally quite good advice and direction for planning, but also for residents who are applying for applications or developers about what the intent is, and generally they're quite consistent. So we do have regard to them because we're obliged to under the planning scheme. It does make reference to it that you must have regard to it. With respect to if it was a grounds of refusal, we did have a case at Taruna Hotel where we had it as a grounds of refusal, and my personal opinion, a little bit baffled as to why they have no regard to it. It was they decided it had no regard to it and was taken out. So following that, we haven't relied on it in grounds of refusal, but as you know, we have so few refusals a year anyway, and certainly that wouldn't be the main basis for it. So it provides some guidance. It's not overly strong, unfortunately, and it's also worth noting that in the new Tasmanian planning scheme, which we'll move to eventually, doesn't include those two elements of the planning scheme.
Okay. Yeah, well, look, that's really interesting. I guess we've seen a precedent set by the planning, by the appeals tribunal, that that those desired future character statements weren't actually a reason to refuse. And I guess that does beg the question why it's there, and then it sounds like it's being removed anyway. So, but I can see why he would, why a representative would look at that particular desired future character statement and see that it does appear to be, at least in a subjective way, at odds with the application. The other one I wanted to ask about is on page 16 with the privacy for all dwellings. Again, representatives raised the issue of privacy, and in fact, I think that was the strongest argument that was put, I thought, in the representations. But it actually says, then in proposal at the start of page 17, it says, does not comply, the first floor master bedroom window, the proposed dwelling is set back is only 2.2 metres from the northern boundary, not high level, etc. So, but then we go on and talk about, for this reason, a condition has been included. So, my question is, if this condition hadn't been, I guess I'm reading this and thinking, well, the application didn't meet the planning scheme, and then we've just conditioned to actually make it compliant. Is that, am I reading that correctly?
In response to you, Mayor, yes, we do that. It's much better to deal with these things by way of condition than going and refusing the application and having to deal with the refusal at the tribunal. Screening is something that designers often overlook or don't really have fair regard to the requirements of planning scheme. They just lodge things with us and let us be the people to do their assessments, which is probably not the way it's meant to occur, but that's what does. So if the applicant took issue with the condition, they can appeal just the condition, which is a much better way to deal with it. And we do it with other requirements as well to just bring it into compliance. And we've obviously, it's come out of the assessment on its own, but it is coupled with the fact that there were representations. But we wouldn't not put the condition on if there were no representations, because we do represent our community. Even if they didn't have the ability to read it or didn't take the time to read it, we probably still would have applied the condition.
Yeah, because you didn't feel it met the, it wasn't consistent with the planning scheme without the condition.
That's right. The off-site amenity impacts are not acceptable.
But with the screening installed, it is consistent Correct. With the planning scheme, and that's why it's recommended for approval.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for that clarification. Are there any other speakers? Councillor Westwood, would you like to sum up? Okay, the motion as moved by Councillor Westwood and seconded by Councillor Reet is that the Planning Authority resolves that the development application for two multiple dwellings, one existing at 23 Garnett Street, Blackmans Bay, for G Hills and Partners Architects, be approved subject to the following conditions, and there are 14 of them. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, the motion is carried. Next item is the on page 42 is DA 2019-609, development application for two multiple dwellings, one existing, partial demolition of existing dwelling, etc. There's a recommended motion on page 48. Would anyone like to move that motion? Moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Westwood. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Again, we see an infill development application, and I join with my colleagues who mentioned on the first of these that the checklist at the end is quite refreshing, as is the rest of the report and its structure. So thank you very much for that. I think this one is relatively straightforward in terms of it meeting the scheme with the conditions recommended, and I'm happy to commend it to Council.
I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I've got a feeling I'm about to. Yes, gardens again. Page point 9 of the permit on page 50 says landscaping must be provided and maintained at all times in accordance with the endorsed landscaping plan. There's the problem again. Because I thought they were, along with the questionable words about, gardens of interest and, you know, that very objective thing, we're now back to the landscaping plans that are put in at the time that the building is developed under this need to remain the same for the life of that property. And to me that is just... not what we are intending to do, nor should we be wanting to do that, because that essentially says if you rip out your garden and redesign it, you're actually breaching a condition of the permit that your property was approved under in the first place. So we haven't come as far as I thought we had.
What would you propose? Are you asking a question or moving an amendment?
I'm expressing some outrage. I would suggest...
Or you could suggest to the mover and seconder.
I would love to suggest that they change those words, and I'm just on the fly trying to think what we would change them to. Yes. Okay, so I would suggest that they remove the words so that it reads Landscaping must be provided in accordance with the endorsed landscaping plan, etc., etc. So take out the words and maintained at all times.
Sorry, that was moved by Councillor Street. And who seconded it? Councillor Westwood. So, just for the audio recording, Councillor Street and Councillor Westwood have agreed, as movers and seconders, that the words "and maintained at all times" be deleted from condition number 9. There's no other lights on, Councillor. No, it's not an amendment because the mover and seconder have agreed. So it just is the motion now. But you're welcome to speak because there's no other lights on, so it'd be helpful. Councillor Midgley.
I have a question in regards to that change. I'm just asked after clarification in regards to why was it put there in the first place? Is that a planning requirement? And what does this mean if we are removing and maintained at all times?
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, it's a standard condition that councils use through not just Tasmania but interstate as well. It's to maintain it, it's to try and protect the streetscape and the amenity of the area and make a contribution to the leafy character of the municipality, which is favourable as expressed by the residents in a number of surveys. You could take out the word maintained, it's still an endorsed plan, so technically we can still enforce it regardless.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. Just a question. Has this come to the attention of other councils and has this been a problem for any other councils as much as it seems to be for this one?
Mr. Tyler Moore. You.
Through you, Mayor. I'm not aware of any issues with them, but the question hasn't been asked. We do have a Southern Planners reference group. I can ask the other Southern councils we're in contact with them about their use and application of those conditions, and I can bring that back to the council if they wish, but obviously each council has its own planning department and considers their own municipalities separate to one another.
My problem with this is we've had this debate twice already. This will be the third, and we're not. And I'm really pleased we're not debating. You know, no one's tried to debate it again because there's really, you know, there's that actual. It's only a very tiny part of this DA, but we have expressed not a unanimous, but a majority view that we don't want to see this condition there. I'm disappointed myself. I missed it. Councillor Street maybe as well, but we've. Have made this decision, and I'd love to see us not have to do this debate every time we have a condition. Any other speakers? The motion was moved by... Oh, Councillor Street, would you like to sum up?
Look, only to say thank you to Councillor Reid for picking up that amendment. It was so similar to the last one that it almost sailed through to the keeper. But I think we've landed where we should, albeit not quite from the sounds of the advice that we've just received. But in any case, I have every confidence that we'll look at it again and try and make sure it doesn't continue to happen.
The motion is moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Westwood, and it's that the Planning Authority resolves that the development application for two multiple dwellings, one existing partial demolition of existing dwelling, demolition of outbuilding shed at 247 Roslyn Avenue, Blackmans Bay, for another perspective, be approved subject to the following conditions, and there are 11 of them. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motion is carried unanimously. Oh, there's a division. Probably got in here. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Bastine. Sorry. Councillor Street. Those in favour is Councillor Street, Councillor Bastine, Councillor Reid, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Boss and Councillor Winter, and those against is Councillor Midgley. The motion is carried. The next item. Now the Planning Authority adjourns and the open session will commence at 6:12 p.m. And we now move to motions of which notice has been given, and we have one on page 76 from Councillor Westwood. Would you like to move that?
I would, thank you.
Yeah. Anyone want to second it? Councillor Midgley, would you like to speak to the motion?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. This is similar to a motion I moved last year around this time when our meeting fell in between Easter and Anzac Day, I believe, last year. So the purpose is predominantly to ensure that if they want to, staff and councillors can have an extended Easter break and not need to be reading potentially hundreds of papers, agenda papers, during their Easter break. But I just wanted to flag that this year we have 5 meeting dates on the second Monday of the month, which we need to move. So potentially we could give consideration when we're setting the meetings for 2021 that perhaps we could move them to the first and the third Monday of each month instead of the second and the fourth. We would still obviously end up with the same number of meetings, but we wouldn't run into the problem we have where we have at the start of the year a lot of council meetings that fall on a Monday public holiday and have to read agenda papers over the long weekend. So just something to consider for next year, but certainly for now just asking councillors to support changing the date of the meeting after Easter to bring it forward. We still have a break between council meetings because the month before is a 5-week month.
No other lights on. Councillor Midgley.
Sorry, only to say that I think Councillor Westwood is very organised and further planning and holidays, and I think it's great that she picks this up for us.
Would you like to sum up, Councillor Westwood? Very good. So the motion moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Midgley, is that Council bring forward its scheduled general meeting from 5:30 p.m. on Wednesday the 15th of April 2020 to 5:30 p.m. on Monday the 6th of April 2020. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? Ooh, we have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Street, Reid, Westwood, Cordova, Midgley. And Winter, and those against is Councillors Bastone and Woss, and the motion is carried. That's by absolute majority. Okay, the next item. Petition still being actioned. There was a petition headed, dog poo bags will be brought to a future council meeting. Petitions received in the last period, at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. And on page 77, we have an item called Electric Vehicles in Council Fleet with a recommended motion on page 80. Would anyone like to move the recommended motion? Perhaps someone has a motion that's not the recommended motion. Councillor Michley, do you have a motion that's not the recommended motion? Or did you want to move the recommended motion?
No, I'm happy to move the recommended motion unless...
Still give someone a second. Can't move. Seconded by Councillor Street. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Dool, for the speedy response for this report. I spoke to this motion when I first put it forward in regards to Council considering this to transition to electric vehicles in our council fleet, and I thank you also to the Mayor again who discussed this with me and also thought this was a great idea. So in the first motion, so I just note the report is in response to a notice of motion that was passed on the 28th of January that read that a report will be provided to Council which outlines the costs and benefits, financial and greenhouse, of moving a larger share of Kingborough's vehicle fleet to full electric powered vehicles as well as electric charge stations options before the finalisation of the draft budget. I note as well that it's the action of the Kingborough Council Climate Change Plan identifies that Council will develop and implement an electric vehicle EV integration plan for Council's light fleet, and also in the action plan, in the Council Climate Change Plan, it also identifies that Kingborough Council commits to zero net emissions by 2050. The report has been framed in terms of potentially purchasing one full electric vehicle for Council's light fleet during 2020-21, as well as the installation of one EV charge station in the Kingston vicinity. Council currently has two hybrid vehicles in its light fleet, with two or more likely to be purchased in 2021. An extensive analysis was undertaken as part of the EVA report compilation, but the summary of the EV component was as follows. The higher capital cost is offset by significant savings in operational expenses and higher resale value upon trade in it. The net additional annual cost is likely to be the order of $1,500, $2,000 per year averaged over the life of the vehicle embedded energy. I note that the motion... Excuse me, I just need to go back to the my page. The motion is to recommend to purchase, to consider in the next council budget of one electric vehicle fleet. I note that it does not recommend for a charging station at this point. I understand some councillors might be questioning that in regards to considering that we should go ahead and actually consider the installation of electric vehicle charge station in this budget. I feel like perhaps moving towards one full electric vehicle will be the process in the next 5 years. I think in the community a lot of things will be changing. There's, I think in the Huon recently, there were and South Hobart, there's a community groups kind of getting together to look at bulk purchasing of electric vehicles. This is only going to be growing within the next 5 years. I know the Huonville Council and other councils did get the grant in regards to the charge station. I'm aware that we didn't do that, and I guess once Kingston Park gets up and going, that I think there'll be potential for something like that there for a charge station, for a station there. I think we're at the brink at the moment of council of where we're actually moving to this, and considering the point A in this motion is a step towards taking action in this area. So hopefully other councils will support this consideration.
Councillor Reet.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm very excited about this. I know that the trials that we've had with the other vehicles that we have been going well. But I did want to raise the issue of the lack of noise emissions from the electric vehicles and wish to thank one of our community members, Tricia Ramsey, for drawing this to our attention, particularly in light of people with disabilities, as well as pedestrians, other road users and cyclists, because one of the issues of electric cars is that they are very, very quiet, and if you are sight impaired and relying on your hearing as a sense, then you probably would have, may have quite limited ability to hear them, and that could end in some sort of tragedy. Now, I understand that there is an acoustic vehicle alerting system, or AVAS, that can be fitted, which actually does mean that the vehicles make a noise when they're travelling, and obviously that would be useful. There is an additional cost. I'm not aware of what that cost is, and I don't know whether Mr. Dool has looked into this at all, but I'm sure, and unfortunately we didn't see this report before the Access Committee last week, but I'm sure that they would, the members there would voice some concerns about potential conflict between you know, road users of all sorts with such quiet vehicles. And, you know, I've got no doubt it is the way of the future. It'll be a great thing if we can meet some of the predicted targets when we do go to electric vehicles, but we do need to consider the range of safety implications for others. So just wondering if perhaps Mr. Dool could comment on that.
Mr. Dool. Thank you, Mayor. I've been driving the hybrid for probably 3 years now, and yes, it is quite surprising, especially in car parks, how they are silent, and you tend to wonder why people aren't getting out of the way, so it is quite interesting. I only just got the letter about the noise issue today, I think, so it's my understanding that the technology to retrofit isn't widely available in Australia. It's a requirement in the US and Europe, but when I spoke to David Reeve about it, he said, well, it's not a requirement on vehicles in Australia, and he wasn't convinced it would be widely available, but I'd be happy to check that out, because I must admit I don't actually know.
Sorry, yep. So, yes, no, it's not mandatory, but I guess it's a question of whether I would like to see us, if we do go ahead with this purchase, that we do include it if it can be retrofitted, and I don't know whether you need a... whether the movers of the motion would need an amendment to ensure that we do include that in this, so that it can be investigated as part of the... I'm just concerned that otherwise it might go through without that provision in there.
So you're just looking for something that says that we'll investigate...
the inclusion of a acoustic vehicle alerting system to be fitted to the vehicle that is purchased.
Are you happy with that, Mr. Dool? Sorry.
Oh, through you, Mayor. So we're just talking about the electric vehicle, not the four hybrids.
Yeah,
no, I think that's good.
Oh, well, sorry. No. We should look at the existing vehicles as well, though. That's probably a separate matter to this. That's probably a separate one. If I can, no pun intended, park that for now, and we can investigate that, but I want to ensure that any future ones that we do from now on, that we do have that provision if it can be retrofitted. So if we can include those words, if the mover and seconder are amenable to that, I'd appreciate it.
Can you help? Is Mr. Smee's wording, is that what you're looking for?
Yes, it's abbreviated to AVAS, yep. Consider the inclusion of an acoustic vehicle alert system fitted on to this vehicle, in this vehicle. Fitted in this vehicle. Okay. I guess my words are not considerate. I want us to do it if it can be done. So it's probably include an acoustic vehicle alert system fitted in this vehicle if...
Viable.
If fit...
Available?
If what? If viable, yeah. But I don't mean viable as in our budgetary sense. I mean viable as in possible to do.
Yeah, Mr. Dool, sound like it. Yeah, yep. We might be struggling to actually procure them, so... Yeah. Well, I think Mr. Dool's got the message loud and clear. So, Councillor Minchell, are you happy with that? And Councillor Street, are you happy with that? Both of them for the order have nodded in agreement. So we now have a point C, which is not really a point, is it? Now, C, include an acoustic vehicle alert system fitted in this vehicle if viable. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. I acknowledge that there is an appetite in the community for council to show some leadership in this area, but I'm not convinced that electric vehicles are the way of the future. I think it's just as likely that hydrogen is the way of the future. It's more in line with the culture that we're used to, filling up our tanks with something. I don't think the report really provides enough information about the environmental benefits from the purchase of one vehicle, and certainly I do not agree that there is a higher resale value upon trading. I don't think that's correct. Sorry, Mr. Dool. I would much prefer personally to see us continue with the purchase of hybrid vehicles. They do have a higher resale value and they don't have range anxiety that comes with them because they're always charged themselves. I have concerns about the fact that the Hyundai Ioniq is a small car. I'm not sure it would be classified as a medium-sized EV sedan. I guess it depends what purpose we're going to be using it for. I also have concerns about staff having to charge a vehicle at home and how we would reimburse their power bills for that cost to charge a vehicle overnight in the absence of a fast charger. I am glad that we're not recommending the purchase of a fast charger given we didn't apply for funding from the state government when we had the opportunity to do that. And I guess the point C, I can certainly see why we would need something like that, but I certainly don't have any idea about how much something like that would cost. So I think this is a first step and leading by example, but I certainly don't agree with having a plan to have the whole of council's fleet move to electronic vehicles. I would much rather see us move to hybrid vehicles until we know exactly what where this is going to end up in the future.
Councillor Bastain.
Thank you. Well, this report, it's a bit like last week. This report makes me really angry. This council was a leader in climate work. We had the climate change lab. We were there. We have fallen further and further behind. To not put an electric vehicle charge station in Kingston is incredibly short-sighted, in my opinion. It was short-sighted not to apply for the $50,000 grant that the state government were offering us in their Charge Smart program. And when we have a look at what the other councils in around Tasmania have done, even without taking that money from the government, I mean, we've got Meander Valley, Launceston, Brighton, Clarence, Huon, Hobart, and we look at what we've got available for electric charging within Kingborough, and we have three charging points. Two of them are in Kettering at the Cove Motel, and one of them is at the Adventure Bay store. Only the Adventure Bay store one is a public one. And I look at it and I think, and we want tourism and we are not putting them in. If you go into the Huon, at the moment there are seven charging points in the Huon. I was down there today, the signs are on the parking lots, very clearly a car with an electric charger. Other people are doing it and we're just sitting here saying, oh, maybe, oh, we'll look at it in the future, we'll let whoever drives it from home charge it under his own electricity. I mean, to not put one in at Kingston Park when we're doing all the work there, it would be expensive, but a simple matter of putting one in the parking area near the new playground where people could park and go and get a coffee or whatever in the coffee shop that's going to be developed there or have their children playing. I just think we are wasting the opportunity and we're going to look like old fuddy-duddies in a few years. This is a mistake not to put in a charging station. I said it last time and I'm saying it again this time.
Councillor Watts.
Thank you, Mayor. I totally endorse what Councillor Bastone said. In 2007, I think it was, that all the car companies in the world that were existing at that stage got together and they all decided that electric cars were the way of the future, but no one wanted to make the first move. With the exception of the Japanese that even were talking about putting in air cons into their cars, that they would be able to do that and design that. We hear Councillor Westbrook talk about a hydrogen-powered vehicles. Well, they are available in Australia and they've been available for some time. Hyundai actually produce one. Only one problem. You've got to go to Sydney to fill it up. So if you live in Tasmania, you've got to drive to Sydney to fill it up, to come back, to run around, to go back to Sydney and fill it up. Well, we all know that's not going to happen, is it? So hydrogen is an option. But EVs are the way of the future. There's no... You'd have to have your head in the clouds to think that that wasn't the way of the future. It is the way of the future, unless something else is developed in the interim that we don't know about. We hear about the silent vehicles. Well, some of the cars now that are petrol engine are very silent and people can't hear them. In fact, I think it was about 7 years ago in Alice Springs, and the Alice Springs Council actually had a meeting on how they were going to work with the hybrid cars in Alice Springs, because people there had almost been run over because they didn't hear the cars coming. In Alice Springs, the people got lazy, that's the pedestrians, and they walked. They relied on their ears, they didn't look. And as I said, a couple of them nearly got bowled, and so the Alice Springs Council actually discussed what they were going to do. If we want to be a part of the future, if we want to show leadership, to get one EV vehicle is... Sorry to say it, but we're not serious. If we are serious, we would start off with a minimum of two. The community is generally waiting in the wings, so to speak, now for electric vehicles to come down so they can make their way into electric vehicles. Most people I speak to are waiting for that opportunity and are looking forward to that opportunity. Wherever you drive throughout the world, there are electric stations done in the best location to encourage. If you want to visit Paris and go to the Eiffel Tower, the closest parking spot is an electric charging spot. So they recognise that. We talk about tourism. The tourists coming into Tasmania, I would say there's a fair percentage, and I'd say a large percentage of those, that would rent an EV vehicle and visit the state. In fact, I understand there is one rent-a-car company looking at changing their fleet now to EVs. But we sit around and say, well, you know, we should go hybrids. Had a discussion with a guy the other day. He's got a Toyota Corolla hybrid. His mileage consumption is no better than my Corolla, which is not a hybrid. So I'm not sure we're going to go hybrids. And I'm disappointed that our report in front of us perhaps is short, but we have not got any figures on fuel consumption and the distance travelled. And as the report clearly says, the extra cost of these EVs can be spread over the life of the vehicle due to the reduced running costs. My belief is that we should at least go for two. We need to lead into the future. The electric stations are a point. We've missed the first opportunity of grant funds. We need to be voicing our concern about that. We need to show leadership, because as soon as we can provide EV charging stations, I'd be surprised if there's not a number of community members there wanting to use it. And those community members may not be Kingborough. They might be in rent-a-cars, or they might be people from across the river coming this way for the day. I think if we make the decision of going one and half-heartedly about it, I think we've lost the plot. I really think that we need two, as a minimum of two. And I think the other aspect that we should be looking here now is to looking at the conversion of all of our fleet to EVs. It's going to happen. Trucks are talking about it, buses are talking about it, and distance between Sydney and Melbourne and even further afield than that. we've got to be a part of that thought process. If we want to hang around and work with old, outdated ways of doing things, that's really putting our head in the sand and not being alert. We need to let the car companies know that's what we want. We want competition, and they should be out there providing what we, and I say we, the community, what we want. And if you look at a number of people that are storming all the cities of the world making protests about climate change, I'd suggest that the majority of those are looking for EVs, and on that basis I will vote against this recommendation.
Councillor Corover.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor, to salvage this motion, I'd like to propose an amendment, if that's okay.
Yep.
And the amendment would be that Council A, consider the purchase of full electric vehicles, plural, for utilisation in its light fleet as part of the 2020-2021 budget estimates processes, and strike clause B.
Yep. Do you want to just the mover and second of enjoy the sound of that?
Consider the purchase of full electric vehicles, plural. Yep. And if I saw nods around the room...
Can we also delete the apostrophe in its?
Okay.
Sorry.
And if... Reading the room, would anybody want it to say multiple full electric vehicles or just...
I don't think it needs to...
Yep.
Oh, let's General just Manager. Hang on, General Manager, give me the look.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, if I may, in framing your amendment, Councillor Cordova, I am mindful of the operational requirements of our light fleet, and whilst it does say light fleet, we do have requirements for our tracks and trails, access and reserves, etc., and I'm not sure, because I don't have the information available, whether electric vehicles are able to provide us with the operational requirements for the complete light fleet.
And so I guess just a question back on that is, as read, the amendment, it without specifying the number that we should go for, it includes, it wouldn't be a problem, would it, is my question. Because we could go for... we could have a million, couldn't we?
Yeah.
Okay, so are you suggesting that maybe we add something like consider the purchase of multiple full electric vehicles and more hybrids or something? Or I just want to see more than one. Oh, yes, I think I'd like to ask a question of our staff about that.
Yeah, and but you are keeping what was C and is now what would be B in this motion, aren't you? Include the acoustic vehicle alert system.
Are we keeping B? I wouldn't like to. But can I hear some comments from Mr. Dool?
Yeah, Mr. Dool. Say this.
Through you, Mayor, that the feedback I've had even about the existing motion was that we'd have to be clear that we have a vehicle ready for changeover anyway in the financial year, because that's a fairly important part of the overall equation of fleet management. So, one, I'm confident we could probably find for one vehicle, but if we're going to multiples, then we really would have to crunch some numbers on losing money on vehicles maybe that we changed over too early and things like this.
Yeah, so let's not be too specific in this amendment then. Let's just say consider the purchase of full electric vehicles, plural, and then we can talk about it offline.
Yep. Yeah.
Thanks very much.
And
I didn't put in the amendment for acoustic vehicle alert systems.
So you're happy for it to stay in the agenda, in the new motion?
Yeah, if the mover and the seconder are, that's fine.
So the mover was Councillor Midgley. Are you happy with that motion now?
Sorry, can I make an amendment as well?
Is he asking permission from the mover and seconder if they are happy to change it, I think. Yes.
Correct.
And so the Councillor Midgley who moved is just considering whether she's happy for a change. If she says no, then Councillor Cordova have to move an amendment. Not really, because we're in a situation where I'm just asking the mover and seconder if they're happy to change. And who seconded it? Was it Councillor?
Look, I'm happy to, but now we have to speak.
Yeah. So that's now the mover and seconder for the audio have agreed to Councillor Cordova's suggested wording. So it's not an amendment, it's now the motion. And the motion is, just to clarify for everyone, is that Council A consider the purchase of full electric vehicles for utilisation in its light fleet as part of the 2020-21 budget estimates process, and B, include acoustic vehicle alert system fitted in these vehicles if viable. So we've heard from Councillor Cordova. Have you finished your contribution?
Okay.
Yeah, cool. All right. Councillor Mitchell, do you want to speak
there now? There was just one more. We weren't including the bit about the charge stations.
Yes. That's correct. Yes, that's not in the motion now. Yes. Councillor Bastine.
I'd like to move an amendment to read C, consider the installation of an electric vehicle charge station in Kingborough during the 2020-21 budget estimates.
Do you want to ask the mover and seconder if they're happy, or do you want to actually move an amendment?
Are they happy with this amendment?
Councillor Mitchell is nodding her head. Councillor Street says no, so you do need to move an amendment. So we'll just get the words up on screen. I'll get you. This is a classic case of a very small agenda generating a very large amount of debate on one issue that normally wouldn't get this much. Is that correct, what's on the screen there, Councillor Bastone? Mm-hmm. Consider the installation of an electric vehicle charging station
in Kingston during the 2021 budget estimates.
Okay, looking for a seconder to that amendment, Councillor Cordova. Just before you speak on it, the amendment, do you mind? Mr. Dools raised his hand, just wanted to ask or raise an issue, I think.
As the report suggests, Mayor, that will be exceedingly difficult in the time frame. There is a lot of variables in terms of locations, technology, needed infrastructure to facilitate the technology. That's why I was conservative and said, look, I'll be ready for consideration in the next lot of estimates. But there's just so many variables. I don't even know how we'd come up with an indicative number for what a charge station that we want might cost for consideration in the budget estimates.
Well, I don't know. I looked at a lot of stuff online, and I do disagree with the Mayor that even if this was a long agenda, I would still be bringing this up, because I think it's so important that we don't miss this opportunity, that it just goes on and on. And when you read the government reports of the different ways it's being done in different states, you know, this to me is the most important thing that is before us as a Kingborough Council at the moment, even more than the swimming pool or Silverwater Park.
Right. Okay, Councillor Street's got his lighter. On the amendment.
On the amendment. It is a long way from the most important thing that Council is considering at the moment. I thank Mr. Dool for his contribution, because that was going to be my question to him, is even if we pass this, could he actually be ready to have something for consideration of budget estimates? Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Dool, but I think the answer to that is probably not. No. So on that basis, I don't know why we would, A, ask for it knowing that it's not possible, or B, pull Mr. Dool off the mountain of other incredibly important work that he spoke to us about at the workshop last Monday in relation to coastal erosion and all sorts of other matters, to try and get something that we suspect he's not going to be able to do and we might not fund anyway. So much better off him bringing it to the next round of budget estimates, and I know that that's not going to please everybody, but he is but one man and it is but one team.
Thanks very much. Through you, Mayor. I'm very cognizant of the resource constraints, and I think that it behoves us to unconstrain those constraints and to give more resources to climate action, as we've heard time and time again from the community, from me in this chamber and from many other people. But I just want to speak quickly about the fact that this is no time to be conservative. In fact, this is the time to be ambitious, and it is the time to get into gear and make changes to our plans, change our priorities in order to make climate action happen. The community wants it. The overwhelming majority of the community wants it, as we saw from our AGM. The community demands it, in fact. And I hate to be flippant, but if China can build a 1,000-bed hospital in 6 days and New South Wales has managed to switch 8,000 buses to all electric in the near future, I simply cannot wait another year while we muck about determining whether or not we can have an electric vehicle charging station. If it doesn't pass the pub test, if you talk to anybody in this community who recognises that our goals here are to be a visionary community where we're accountable, we've got respect, excellence and inclusiveness. And I look to excellence. We in Australia are currently the highest emitting per capita in the world. The fact that New South Wales can switch 8,000 Sydney buses over that quickly and we can't even have an electric vehicle charging unit when Huon does. I'm fully cognizant of the grants. I understand that. But what I'm saying is that we're in a time where we need to change our priorities, and that's why I think this is so important. Yes, that's what I'm going to say on this. Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I just have a couple of questions. Do we at all know in the wind if any grants are coming again for charging stations?
Mr. Dool?
Through you, Mayor, not that I've heard of, but the Prime Minister seems to be becoming more inspired by the day, so you never know. But nothing obvious at this stage.
We've even got a climate minister in our own state government. When we didn't apply for the vehicle charging station grant, what were the sort of key reasons why we didn't apply?
Mr. Dool.
Through you, Mayor, there was significant matching costs that were required even when you got the grant, and there was also potentially significant maintenance costs involved in running it, the logistics of how you worked out who used it. But there were still the issues of where were we going to put it to maximise its utilisation, and that wasn't clear then, and it still isn't now. If I could digress slightly, I remember that a boat pump-out facility at Constitution Dock, I think it got $250,000 grant, and it's virtually never been used because the background work wasn't done in who wanted it, how would they use it, what fittings did they have. All the background wasn't done, and I've always been mindful that I want the charge station to be used, I want it to be relevant to the users, and I'm still not clear on exactly where that would be to maximise the exposure of electric vehicles as well, which is an important thing as well. The reason that the charge stations are at, say, at Huon Valley and Kettering is because on a single charge, you just pass, most tourists would just pass straight through Kingston. So utilisation in Kingston would tend to be for local consumption, and in my opinion there just isn't that many local vehicles currently, and that was why I thought another year to properly research, potentially $100,000 in expenditure would be worthwhile, and there may be further grants coming along in the interim anyway.
Thank you very much. Just a few more questions. So when you talk about in your opinion, I'm just wondering, has there been any conversations or consultations further with community members in regards to people asking for electric vehicle charge stations in our community?
Mr. Dool, or any other member of staff?
Through you, Mayor, ironically, the gentleman who I asked to actually do the supplementary report was Clive Atwater, who has led the charge on electric vehicle utilisation in Tasmania for a number of years. He's worked with the government on the tourism side of where the optimum location is for stations. So he has quite a good knowledge of what utilisation might be, and as in his opinion too, we just aren't quite there in exactly what we might want and where. So, no, haven't spoken directly to the community, but certainly Clive has over the years and has a really good working knowledge, even to the extent of how many vehicles are actually out there and where they are garaged.
Thank you. Mayor, people might be surprised at my thoughts on this, and I really, the passion in the room for this is fantastic. Councillor Bastone, I've never seen you so passionate about something so environmental.
It's fairly sad.
If I can say that.
Rubbish and waste.
For me personally, I read this and I actually feel personally guilty that I haven't gone out and bought myself an electric vehicle to make a stand. But I know that in the future, I soon will change my own personal habits around that. I've always been considerate of using my car. I've done so many climate change projects around getting people out of, using their personal car. It takes personal responsibility as well as pointing fingers. And I think that, yes, councils are leading the way, government is leading the way, not really, but, there are councils leading the way and taking action on this, but I really respect our officer, Mr. Dool, with his knowledge, with his understanding of where we have gone with council. I was happy with that first motion in regards to the fact that, and I don't want to sit back and say, oh, we're not ready yet, we're just sort of waiting and we need to take the action now. I think we do, but I think there's legitimate points that he has made in regards to how long this takes, the fact that we do not have a place for it at the moment, the fact that we've done this, there has been report and research in regards to that Kingston perhaps at the moment isn't the place for an electric charge station. There's been... we've received a report about that and heard in regards to that tonight. I feel like taking the step to... We haven't even the motion doesn't even say commit to an electric vehicle. It just says consider. I mean, that will get to budget. We won't even... we might not even have an electric vehicle. It's just a consideration. I think the first motion that was put forward in regards to consider an electric vehicle is a start, and I think we will, well, I hope that we will, and I definitely will, keep this on the agenda. There are fleet requirements in government. Yes, it would be great if we could be aspirational and change everything, but it is the little steps, and we are significantly making changes in this area. I just think this amendment, again, you might all just be aghast that I am not absolutely pursuing this, but I just really, from what Mr. Dool has said tonight, it's not something he's going to just put under his, the books and not consider. He is researching it. If there is a grant, I think he'll step up and take it. Traders in Purple, oh my gosh, the development there could have had so many fantastic environmental benefits. We could have made them have we couldn't have because of the planning scheme, but we could have been requirements to have a charging station there. Like, there's so many opportunities that we haven't done and haven't kind of considered that. So I'm happy with what was firstly presented to us. I'm happy with that we're taking a step, and that hasn't even been committed to. Let's step forward. Let's commit to having an electric vehicle, and then let's commit to making sure this is on the agenda, that we commit to in the future, in the next budget, having a charge station, that I feel like in this next year we will have the research and there will be a place. Kingston Park will be kind of up and going. We'll be able to really see it's going to be a growing industry. Anyway, that's what I have to say.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. I agree with some of the points made by Councillor Midgley. I was happy with the recommendation as originally drafted. I think it's changed quite substantially to take out the one full electric vehicle. There are many different, there are four types or something of electric vehicles. Full electric vehicles are fully electric and require charging, and that doesn't mean hybrid, that means full electric. The reason, I hate to be the person in the room that brings up the numbers, but the reason more people aren't buying vehicles for their own personal use is because the cars are more expensive. And so if you're looking at an argument over how much do we spend, it's only an extra $20,000. Well, it's an extra $25,000 for one vehicle. If we're talking about changing the whole fleet over, it's going to add up and add up. And, the resale value of them is not good. I just think we start, maybe we buy one electric vehicle, we see how we go, we see what happens over the next couple of years, we put in a charging station and we go from there. We are about to enter into budget deliberations, and I know this says consider, but we have a lot of things that we need to consider as part of the budget, and the environment is overwhelmingly an issue we need to consider, but we also need to consider footpaths and roads and everything else that council provides.
Councillor Bastone, you've made a contribution, but with a question.
Yes. Has Mr. Doole considered the fact that the council is building a destination playground, which, according to the mayor, is going to be the best in Tasmania?
Southern Tasmania.
This will mean that we will have people coming to Kingston from outside Kingston. Kingston will not be just a place to pass through or a place where Kingston residents want to charge their cars, but places where people who come from outside Kingston would like to charge their cars while their children play. And since we're putting infrastructure in at Kingston Park now, it might be the sort of place we could put a charger.
Mr. Doole.
Through you, Mayor, no, all I did was ask for an opinion, as I said, of a person who knows a fair bit about this. He did consider Kingston Park and what he saw as the future plans for Kingston Park. But I think the point you've raised would just be a really valid argument. I'll have a lot of more meat on the bones this time next year, specifically too, about the types of vehicles. I mean, is it going to be AC? Is it going to be DC? What size? What technology? I honestly, in the time frame we've got, I would have no idea. And as I said, it could well be of the order of $100,000 with at least $10,000 running costs to let people charge their cars up for free. So I totally agree with what you're saying about the future, but I think this at this point in time we're not quite ready.
Councillor Cordova with a question.
Yes, a question, yes, yeah. Thank you. If we save $200,000 in operational costs from switching streetlights to LEDs, why can't we use that $200,000 in savings from operational costs for a climate initiative to pay for a charging station? And if we did pay for a charging station to go anywhere, wouldn't it be better than having zero charging stations?
Because we are already spending that money. That money was the reason that we were able to not increase rates by a lot more than 3.9% last year. That project offset a lot of the problems that were going to beset us because of the loss of the charitable rates that we lost through the Southern Cross Care case. So that was that money is... Correct me if I'm wrong, General Manager. Not available.
Yeah. A follow-up question then. If interest rates are at globally historic record lows, wouldn't this be a good time to invest in the infrastructure of the future?
Who wants to do this?
Chief Financial Officer. Look, Mayor, I could answer, but I'd be very biased in terms of, I have to be honest, overall climate change outcomes... A charge station would not be high on my list given the capital cost. If we were spending money, if we had money to spend on climate change outcomes, it wouldn't. But I'm sure the Chief Financial Officer has his opinion too.
Do you still want the Chief Financial Officer?
Yes, please.
Mr. Breen.
Through the Chair. Interest rates are quite low at the moment, but look, the reality is we'll spend $11 million on infrastructure expenditure next year. I think the point that Mr. Doole was making was effectively that we're not ready to make those decisions at this point in time. I think we've got to give ourselves the time to make the most informed decisions that we can make, and then we make an appropriate decision and we move forward with it.
Councillor Wass. Thank you, Mayor. I'm going to talk about the amendment and I'm going to vote against the amendment. The reason I'm going to vote against the amendment, I think tonight we've got ourselves into a situation where we've been saying a lot of things on the run, and at the end of the day, I think we've turned an opportunity into a halt sign. Had I not spoken, I would have moved that the matter be deferred, pending a full and comprehensive report on how we could achieve what we want, but as I've spoken, I can't. But I can say, Mayor, I will vote against the amendment, and then I will vote against the motion.
Councillor Midgley with a question.
Yes, I have a question. In regards to Kingston Park, if next year we did get some funding, full funding to put an electric charge station there, is that, if it hasn't been planned to happen in Kingston Park, so therefore is it easier to place it sort of anywhere, or does it need to be planned, or I'm just wondering about that, like could we at all, is there at all any thinking at all in Kingston Park about where possibly it could be placed?
Mr. Dole.
Through you, ma'am, not to my knowledge, but that doesn't say it wasn't thought about, but I haven't seen it incorporated into plans, I have to be honest. So in terms of infrastructure upgrades to facilitate it, I don't actually know.
I have another question. Could perhaps we put a motion or a question or wherever, we maybe discussion after the meeting, to consider that in with the infrastructure going into Kingston Park at the moment, perhaps that there is consideration of where perhaps a potential electric vehicle charge station could be placed? Could we move a motion that that is part of...
General Manager?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I don't believe it would be appropriate to move it tonight. Okay.
Not tonight, in future.
You can move any notice of motion you like. Yes. Councillor Midgley, if don't think there's anything to prevent you from. Look, I will be voting against the amendment because I think Mr. Dool has answered the questions extremely well. And it's in the report. He's, Councillor Cordover talked about the values of this organisation. He's extolling the virtues of accountability, respect and excellence. He wants to plan the infrastructure. He's telling you that he cannot have the report prepared by the budget session. So, for whatever, I can't see why anyone could responsibly vote for this amendment, knowing that the professional officer who would need to do the work to make it happen is telling you it can't happen. So I would urge my colleagues to vote against the amendment. To sum up, Councillor Bastine.
Summed up.
The amendment is to add C. There's no other changes there. It's the whole thing? Okay. So the amendment... Okay. So we're adding... The amendment is to add C, which is consider the installation of an electric vehicle charging station in Kingston during the 2020-21 budget estimates. It was moved by Councillor Bastone, seconded by Councillor Cordover. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against... Have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillors Bastone and Cordover. And those against is Councillors Street, Reet, Westwood, Midgley, Wass and Winter. The amendment is lost. And we're back onto the substantive motion, which is there on the screen. Now, I have in my records Councillor Midgley spoken, Reet, Westwood, Bastone, Wass and Cordover. Any other speakers?
Yeah, I haven't spoken yet.
Oh, you haven't? Okay. I might have written it down with you. Yeah, cool. Well, you've got your light on. Do you want to speak?
Thanks very much. Through you, Mayor. I'll start with a couple of questions. I just would like some clarity over 4.2 in the original motion, or 4.2 in the motion, says that the EVA report was to inform a business case for, quote, one full EV for the Civic Centre light fleet and one EV charge station. I just wanted to clarify why that was the frame of the report, because if I'm not mistaken, on the 28th of January, the motion that was passed just said that a report will be provided to Council which outlines the costs and benefits, financial and greenhouse, of moving a larger share of Kingborough's vehicle fleet to full electric powered vehicle, as well as an electric vehicle charge station. So why was it constrained to just to one? That's the thrust of my question.
Mr. Dool.
I think, Mayor, I interpreted the question as being that the most realistic way forward, given there was a distribution of charge stations elsewhere, that Kingston was the most obvious site, and that was what Clive had discussed in his assessment, that Kingston was the most, given he'd looked statewide for a number of years now, that Kingston was the most obvious place to look. So yes, I just took the liberty of interpreting it as one in Kingston. What is the feasibility of that?
Thank you. I'd like to begin my substantive contribution now. Through you, Mayor, I believe that this is an exercise in diminishing our ambitions and undersizing our expectations. My opinion is that we have no more time for little steps, no more time to be conservative, no more time to drag our feet when it comes to climate action. We have just heard that this is the most realistic way forward. We've heard the term conservative be used. We've heard the term that, you know, we took the liberty of interpreting this to be one electric vehicle. And I'm sorry, but this is not the time to be diminishing our ambitions as a leading force for the climate action movement. This is not the time to be undersizing community expectations of what is achievable. How come it is that in Oslo, 50% of new cars sold in 2017 were either fully battery electric or plug-in hybrid? How can that be the case when in Australia, in Kingborough, here we are one of the richest municipalities, in one of the richest countries in the world, in the richest time in human history, and the IPCC is telling us we have 10 years to act? That was a year ago, so now we have 9 years to act. Next year, hopefully, we'll get a report that says maybe we can consider putting an EV charging station in, then we'll have 8 years to act. Can you imagine when electric streetlights were invented, can you imagine somebody saying we need to delay for another year because we can't figure out where to place the streetlight? We just haven't figured out our placement yet. Put the charging unit anywhere and people will use it, because right now you have to drive to Kettering or you have to drive to Macquarie Point. So literally anywhere you put it next to my house in Allen's Rivulet and it will be used in Kingborough because there is currently no charging station in Kingborough. We have money. We are constantly being told that we have a sound financial basis for this council. And what I keep saying is that this is about rearranging our priorities. We see from our strategic plan that it says clearly and in bold that we are a council that acknowledges the existence of climate change and biodiversity emergency, and we have in place strategies to respond. Well, how come if Sydney has switched 8,000 buses to all electric, why can't we do more than one electric vehicle? Why are we undersizing the community expectations? The problem here is that Australia has the highest per capita emissions of carbon dioxide in the world, with 0.3% of the world's population, but we release 1.07% of the world's greenhouse gases. What is Kingborough doing to not be a part of that litany of costs, climate costs, that are being caused by Australia's high emissions? What are we doing here with the 336 kilometres of coastline that we have when we constantly hear about the risks? What are we doing to show the rest of this state and the rest of the country that we are a leader on climate action? The sooner we adopt EVs at a council level, the sooner those EVs will be available on the second-hand market. That's what they did in Norway, and that's why they have in Oslo 50% of new vehicles sold. 3 years ago, 50% of new vehicles sold were electric. We are dragging our feet, we are behind the times, and frankly, the community will hold us to account for our inaction on this vital issue. Thank you.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll keep my contribution short. I would say that the reason that that Oslo has a 50% uptake of electric vehicles has probably got more to do with the fact that the subsidies available, thanks to the Norwegian government, are somewhere in the region of $8,000 a year rather than anything that local government's done. To pretend that at Kingborough Council we have all the answers or could provide that level of subsidy or do anything that would have that level of impact is frankly ludicrous. We seem to do a really good job of arguing, trying to make perfect the enemy of good around this table sometimes. And I venture that that's what some of the speakers so far tonight have done. Mr. Doole is saying there is a way forward on this, to do it within budgetary constraints and to get a decent outcome. Surely that is better than nothing. And I would say this as well. Councillor Cordova asked, what are we doing in terms of coastal policy for our extensive coastline? Well, let me tell you, if we try and change over our entire light vehicle fleet tomorrow, unless you're planning on putting up rates by 10 or 15%, we'll be doing a few hundred thousand dollars less of it by changing over the entire fleet in one go. So if you want to let perfect get in the way of good, then by all means you go for your life, but I certainly won't be doing that.
I thought it was important when Mr. Doole said that, and if he was given a big lump of, this is how I paraphrase, and feel free to jump in if I get it wrong, Mr. Doole, but if you were given a big lump of cash to spend on something with a capital requirement, you wouldn't put an EV charging station in if you were looking to try and do the best for climate change. And I guess when I listened to Councillor Cordova's contribution that seems to be at odds with that, and in fact he makes it sound like we have the opportunity to fix climate change tonight, and that if we don't vote for an EV charging station, then somehow we'll be responsible for you know, mass extinction or biodiversity, whatever it is. This is how it feels to me when you get on the rant and the high horse. I thought the report was very good. It made the practical case as to why we needed to do the research. I thought the example of the pumping station and the docks was a good one, because I think Councillor Cordova, you did say that if you put a charging station at Allens Rivulet, people would use it. Well, I don't think we'd get the maximum benefit by putting it anywhere. I think Mr. Dool's point about tourists getting more use from a charging station outside of Kingston, because frankly, I suspect a lot of tourists, not most tourists, are bypassing Kingston, using the bypass, and would potentially get a better use elsewhere. I'm also conscious of the fact that we had an engagement strategy that was endorsed at the last council meeting, and it's proposed that we rush through and put an EV charging station without any thought to consultation at all, just because I keep hearing that the community is desperate for us to do this, and one councillor said it's the most important thing a council's doing at the moment. I don't hear that. I also don't notice the community getting a massive, a huge number of community members purchasing hybrid or electric vehicles. That's anecdotal, but as I drive around, I don't notice anywhere near 50% of our local fleet. People aren't making that decision to switch themselves. They are, and I don't hear, as I travel around, people strong desire for us to make an enormous change. The reason I brought this up with Councillor Mitchell in the first place is because I thought this was a good way for us to show leadership. An incremental change in our fleet over time, as long as it's within requirements, is a good approach. And again, this is another example where I think this is a good... This is a outcome that will show leadership. It is a good outcome. Is it the perfect outcome? If we had an unlimited number of amount of money, yes, we would sure purchase a full fleet of electric vehicles, but we have to consider everything. So for all those reasons, I'll support the motion. I thank Councillor Mitchell for bringing it to us originally and for moving the motion. And Councillor Mitchell, would you like to sum up?
Thank you, everybody, for your contributions and a great debate. I hope that in the budget estimates we do commit to purchasing an electric vehicle.
The motion is moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Street. Is that Council A consider the purchase of full electric vehicles for utilisation in its fleet as part of the 2020-21 budget estimates process, and B include acoustic vehicle alert systems fitted in these vehicles if viable? All those in favour, please say aye. Those against?
No.
Have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillors Street, Bastone, Reet, Cordova, Midgley and Winter. And those against is Councillors Westwood and Wass. The motion is carried. We move on to page 81, which is Twin Ovals advertising and signage policy. There's a recommended motion on page 82. Would someone like to move it? Councillor Street, move. Seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. No change to this policy. Policy remains entirely reasonable and gives all tenants at the Twin Ovals the opportunity to use the area for signage within the constraints in the policy.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a couple of questions. I'm just wondering if the local user groups of Twin Ovals have been contacted regarding the update of this policy.
This is me.
Through you, Mayor. The tenant clubs were involved in drawing up the original policy, and we've maintained communication with them in relation to its implementation. I can't say there's been specific consultation on this matter of recently, but certainly the the tenant clubs are aware of the policy and have adhered to it over the years, particularly in respect to the need to contact council for anything that's over and above the standard boundary fencing signage.
Thank you. And just one more question in regards to the regulatory requirements. All advertising must comply with the provisions of state and federal advertising regulations. Does that mean, like, no alcohol or tobacco advertising in that?
Through you, Mayor, that's correct.
Councillor Bastine.
I just have a question in 5.2.2 on naming rights. The pavilion, the council determines what the naming rights will be. Does it have a name at the moment?
Mr. Smee, the answer is no, is it? The answer is no.
Right, thank you. Pennycott.
Okay, there are no other lights on for the record. Councillor Westwood left at 7:15 p.m. Okay, there are no other lights on. Councillor Street, would you like to sum up? The motion is moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Midgley, is that the Twin Ovals advertising and signage policy number 4.8, as attached to this report, be endorsed. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, the motion is carried with the exception of Councillor Westwood, who's absent from the room. The next item is cash in lieu parking policy, and you'll find it on page 86 with a recommended motion on page 87. Would someone like to move that? Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Reet. Councillor Street.
Yet another policy which was clearly so good that it doesn't need any amendment and is still fit for purpose. And I agree with that conclusion and commend the motion to council.
Councillor Medjley.
Thank you, Mayor. And yet again, I have some more questions. I'm just wondering, could I please have an example of where this policy has been utilised? So in regards to where we have expended the funds.
Is this Mr. Ferrier? Mr. Ferrier.
The Chair, Council has always had a cash in lieu of parking policy. It's something which has always been in place. It's something which is a standard procedure for implementing virtually all planning schemes, so that we do get situations where you may have a development, like a shop being built in the middle of the main street, which is obviously doesn't have its own parking but still contributes to the need for parking within the main street. And so there is this ability to take a contribution and provide public parking elsewhere. I'm not aware of where this policy has been used in the last 2 years. So previous to that, there was a number of instances, but I can't give you an exact example. I'm sorry. But it's when we did this policy 2 years ago, we improved it considerably. And there's no reason to change it now because we've found nothing wrong with it or there's been no problems with it. But that's probably because we haven't really used it a great deal in the last 2 years.
Thank you. Just another question, Mayor. So I'm just wondering in the financial report, what's the budget line called? Is it called cash in lieu parking policy?
Through the Chair, John can answer that, but it's in our
Sorry.
Reserves table.
Okay, and it is in the reserves. Okay.
Yeah, if there's a car parking line item in the accounts, You'll notice that's been sitting on about $46,000 for all of this year. It hasn't changed.
Okay. Thank you. So just another question then in regards to that. So say, for example, on the Kingborough Bike Committee, they would like to upgrade some cycling infrastructure or, you know, anything in regards to what the funds could be utilised for. How does staff determine which project utilises these funds? If I was in a cycling committee and said, oh, that could be perhaps the parking policy money, I'm just wondering how you decide on how you use the funds in this line.
Using the parking funds for bike parking
in regards to the funds to be used, funds are to be used for the following: acquisition of land for parking, construction of public parking, improvement to existing public parking, service of loans obtained to provide public parking, or construction or upgrade of public transport, walking or cycling infrastructure, which would result in a reduced demand for parking in that area.
That's
So that's just wondering, if we have these funds of $46,000, how do we determine which projects are utilised for these funds?
Yeah, through the chair. Ideally, it would be done by way of a parking plan for a particular area. Now, the planning scheme provides for that, whereby if there's a parking plan which actually provides for mechanisms to reduce the demand for parking, and it might be through some of the things you just talked about, such as better public transport facilities and opportunities for people to ride their bikes and so on, then that can be done. But it's probably best done in that sort of coordinated way under a parking plan rather than done in an ad hoc way. So at this stage, we haven't used the funds for those types of purposes, but that doesn't mean that they can't be used for those sorts of purposes in the future. And as included in the policy, it allows for that. But ideally, it will be done in a coordinated way as by way of a parking plan.
Sorry if I'm ignorant on this. So we have a parking plan. We have a parking plan for Kingston, but do we have a... Just looking at the mayor, sorry, through the mayor. Do we have a parking plan? Yeah, I just don't understand the process. I guess it's more the process of how we expend the money, and I don't know, do we have a parking plan that steps out that?
Mr. Ferrier.
Through the chair, we don't at the moment, but the policy allows for it. That's the reason for the policy.
Councillor Bastine.
Thank you. I'm just asking, is this only for businesses, or could this actually happen that people would start building small units with no parking and the parking would have to be on the street for... ordinary people, you know.
Through the chair, it's at the discretion of council. So it's not a situation where a developer could say, "I'm not going to give you the parking as required under the planning scheme." This is something which would only be where council sees it as being in the public's best interest. That you know, we don't want parking stations, parking spaces down the main street of the main road. I can't think of any instances where we'd use it in a residential sense. It would only be in business and commercial areas that I would imagine being used.
Councillor Westwood returned at 7:18 p.m. There's no other lights on. Councillor Street, would you like to sum up? He would not. The motion is moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Reid. Is that council approves the policy 3.10, cash in lieu of parking policy, as attached to this report. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motion carried unanimously. We move on to information reports. And we have some exciting information reports. They start on page 93, and there's a recommended motion also on page 93. Would someone like to move and second that? Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Reid. First item is Infrastructure Works Progress Report. Councillor Cordova.
I just have a question, if that's okay. Would anyone like to elaborate a bit more about the Conyngham Beach toilets in addition to what's written in the report? Just because the Conyngham and Lower Snug Progress Association had their meeting and there was some community interest there.
Yeah, there's a bit in the report. Mr. Reeve's not here. We might be able to take it on notice unless... Does anyone knows about the Conyngham toilets and how far off we are? What page is it in the report? I'm sure you've seen it anyway. Page 94.
Top of 94, top of 95.
Yeah.
Nothing to add.
Mr. Ferry, no extra information?
Through the chair, as far as the Conyngham report, the Conyngham toilets are concerned, yes, there was an issue in relation to the plans and the siting of them, but I can't give you any information at this stage in relation to when the construction's about to commence. I'd prefer to take that on notice.
Sure. Yeah. In addition to that, and I would appreciate that going on notice, I think there's community interest about that. There was a specific question at that meeting about site-specific planning for toilets, and an example was used about one place that I forget on the mainland, which had a beautiful view, and it was designed not just like a regular kind of toilet, but something that was very site-specific. With our toilet strategy, is there provision for site-specific architecture of bathrooms when it comes to...
This is me.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the toilet strategy was based on a number of factors, primarily looking to address our legislative inadequacies, particularly in relation to access. I think when you start to get architects involved, the cost goes up, which is what we found at Kingston Beach. And certainly the financial figures included within the strategy do relate to standard off-the-shelf products, which come in a kit form and are certainly significantly cheaper than an architecturally designed one. That's not to say we couldn't go with an architecturally designed facility, but it would need to be part of the budget deliberations for the specific financial year if we were going to do that.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. Just to pass on some positive feedback from a local business about the John Street reconstruction, they were very impressed with the quality of the work and the upgrade to that street. And also just to note, good to see recycling bins being installed at Kingston Beach. I think I've had a few people asking about that, and I think that will be very well received.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Oh, I think I've missed the recycling bins. On what page is that one on? 103. Oh, 103, sorry. Oh, there's no photos, that's why.
That's very honest, I love it.
So, yeah, I'd be interested to know what signage will be going on the recycling bins, actually, if that at all could be sent to us.
Now, a couple of KWS board members here. Signage on the recycling bins?
Through the chair, there will be signage, and I can't tell you what the exact signage will be. We're looking to put the bins there at Kingston Beach, and we're also investigating similar bins on Bruny Island, but that'll be funded separately out of the state government funds.
Great, thank you. Also passing on some community sentiments in regards to Howden Road. Everybody's loving the upgrade there. There had been asked questions in regards to if that upgrade was going to be extended from the Pony Club to the top of the Channel Highway, but I noted today, cycling along there, that there's some pink markings on the road, so I'd say that next stage is going to happen. The Algona to Redwood, the upgrade there on page 99, again, the cycling committee was very happy in regards to that, and riding from Love Living Locally yesterday, I did note that new linkage there, that's fantastic. Having more routes and safe routes to cycle on makes people get out there and actually ride their bikes. A question on page 100 in regards to the Kingston Wetlands bollard fence. So the photos in that picture, are they the images? They're the images of the new bollard fence. Is that correct?
Okay. Mr. Dawes, this.
I'm just wondering. I don't know how well utilised the area is, but
yes.
I was wondering...
Yes, Mayor, it is.
Oh, sorry.
Yes. It's yours, yep.
Oh, it is. Thank you. So when it says on behalf of NRM, so NRM actually paid?
Through you, Mayor. My understanding it was done through the storm relief funding, whatever that was called, and NRM facilitated the works being done.
Oh, great. Fantastic. Thank you. And just in regards to a comment that Councillor Cordova made in regards to architecture, design and toilets, I'd wondered at all, if it's okay to ask this, just if we ever had considered sort of public art being a part of any kind of amenity upgrade or any infrastructure upgrade at all. And I guess an example is where, say, at the City of Hobart, where they have the, I don't know if you've been to the Lena Valley precinct upgrades and the Midtown precincts, and how they have sort of, artists, not sculptures, and all, it can be an artist's response to an upgrade of any kind of development. Have we at all considered anything like that?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, we haven't, but it's not to say that we couldn't.
Councillor Bastone. Oh, yeah, okay, it's Councillor Bastone, then Councillor Cordova.
Me? Okay. On page 103, works underway and planned, installing three memorial seats at various locations. Who are the memorial seats for?
Who's it, Chris? I can tell you because I've just seen one come through, Councillor Bastone. We have a policy, and the members of the community can ask for a memorial seat to be installed, and then they need to pay for it, so $1,500 each. But you actually want to know who they're for. Yeah, okay, well, if GM's taking that on notice. Councillor Cordo.
My question, thank you, through you, Mayor, was just to follow on from what Councillor Midgley was asking about public art. I should know the answer to this, but I don't. The water tank that's on the Huon Highway that's currently getting a mural on it. Yeah, what's happened there? So Taswater just chooses. And they choose what to do and where to do it.
Mm.
It looks lovely.
Have you seen the reservoir one? Is that the one you're talking about? Or the one down at the wetlands?
I mean, no, not the one at the wetlands. On the Huon Highway just before the southern outlet.
Yes, yes, yes.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Could we do stuff like that, please?
I don't know. Well, I don't know if I've got the talent for it, yeah. Okay. There's no more lights on, so we're going to move on to financial report for 1 July 2019 to 31 January. Councillor Westwood.
I don't have a lot of questions this week. Just wondering, the borrowings listed under TasCorp, does that include the extra money for the playground?
Mr. Breen.
Yes, through the chair. And the borrowings that we took out in January, the $2.1 million was the initial amount approved under the Accelerated Local Government Program. So that was the initial sort of stage one. So we're basically doing it in two lots. So that's the first lot.
So the 1.9 will come later?
Through the chair, the 2.9 will be, so it's up to $5 million. So once we've got approval for that, we'll grab that those funds probably around the middle of the year.
Okay, thank you. And then just, can we have a little bit more information on the employee cost delays in replacing staff, 100,000? Which department is that
Mr.
in?
Breen.
Yeah, through the chair, that's essentially across the board. Every time we have someone leave, there's always a period of time where there's a vacancy. There are some costs associated with putting employees on. Sometimes it might be relocation costs. So this is the net difference, and a fair bit of that is coming out of planning, because we've had two vacant positions in planning for a period of time and they've now just been filled. But it is certainly across the board in a number of areas.
Councillor Reid.
Just a quick question in relation to other expenses. On page 111, it's noted there that our other expenses were $86,000 over budget, and it highlights the main areas. I note the legal costs were $23,000 over budget. Are they predominantly planning-related matters, or because there's none that kind of jumped to mind off the top of my head. I'm wondering if we could have some guidance on that.
Mr. Breen.
Through the chair. Essentially, it's across the board, but we've had the last instalment recently of the costs associated with the charitable homes action, so we had to pay part of the costs of the applicant.
Thank you. And while you're still there, could you explain what analysis costs of $21,000 over budget are?
Mr. Breen.
Through the chair. Essentially, that's costs associated with the analysis work we were doing on the Blackmans Bay South work. So it's the cost of us taking the samples off and having them tested.
Thank you.
Taswater stopped footing the bill for that, sadly. No, the light's on. We move on to the Mayor's communications. Okay, we'll move on then. Councillor Westwood.
I just had a question. The meeting on the 9th of January with the Department of State Growth to discuss Kingborough's components of the city deal and timelines to finalise. Are you able to provide any information on those timelines?
Yes. The department and the Minister's office contacted me and asked if we could convene that at the end of last year, and asked if we could convene early in the new year to discuss how we're going with our $20.8 million in infrastructure or congestion busting infrastructure. We met and discussed, and I think there's a difference of opinion between council and the Department of State Growth as to what constitutes a good project and a congestion busting infrastructure project. But the reason that Gary, the general manager, and I decided have invited people to a workshop next Monday is to discuss exactly that and the issue. So we'll Mr. Arnold's had a number of meetings since that, and we'll just go through all those issues and where we're at in terms of the city deal. Also going to be, we made the front page today, and I think there's also some likely to be some coverage tomorrow about the city deal in the Mercury.
And is there any update you're able to provide on the Charitable Rates Steering Committee meeting?
Yes. Myself and Christina Hondale, who's the president of Legat, from West Tamar, and Christy Johnson from Glenorchy are the elected member representatives on the steering committee. The steering committee has been, over the past 12 months, trying to work with, through Legat, to negotiate with both the sector, being the independent living unit run by charities, and with the state government, to come up with a solution to the charitable rates issue. We have worked really diligently. We would have had 15 or 20 meetings in that time. The CEO of LGAT would have had more than that. The position we've got to, though, is that the aged care sector that we're dealing with has clearly not a great desire to find an outcome here, and they have shown no interest in negotiating an outcome. And the position we're left in is that I think it's likely, but not completely fait accompli, that at the next LGAT general meeting at the end of March, LGAT will take a motion to the general meeting, which will be that we start a campaign to change the legislation that's currently prohibiting us from raiding independent living units owned by charitable institutions. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. The Seed Lab Tasmania, the official launch of Botanic Gardens, does Kingborough have any particular role, specific role with Seed Lab, or any contributions?
Not really. Not the council, and there wasn't a lot of local or any local producers, actually.
That's okay.
I was up there a bit disappointed not to see too many of our people there, yeah.
And my second question is about the End of Life Choices Voluntary Assisted Dying Bill Forum. Would you like to provide an update about the sentiment, anything?
Yeah, I think I was expecting a lot more people there. There weren't a lot. There was only about 15 people, but I think they actually made, the following night, had one at Parliament House, and I understand that had a lot of people at it, and I think that was probably, had a much bigger following. We also there wasn't a lot of information, and that's why, thank you for sharing it on social media. I don't think it was very well advertised that it was on, but, it was a good meeting, and there's a small group there that got all the information they needed.
Thank you. And then 29th January, is there any information that we should be aware of about the meeting with Ms. Bender?
Yes, the same, the one that the General Manager reported in his report 2 weeks ago. We both went down, Mrs. Bender is building a home there. She's got an idea about using some of the discharge water from the treatment plant class. It's currently proposed that to pump Class B water from the treatment plant, Blackmans Bay, across to South Arm, but they're only proposing to use about 25% of it. And so She said to us, this whole area is called Tinderbox for a reason. There's not a lot of water here. Could we start pumping it down to local residents? Since then, we had a meeting lined up with Taswater CEO anyway and raised it with him, and he's we've sent her in the right direction to progress it. But I'm not sure it'd be a council... I don't think it'd be a council project. It'd be something that we'd just help out and facilitate. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. The 5th of February, the reps from the Department of Foreign Affairs.
Yes, they came just to introduce themselves and talked about they were on the way down to Brookfield to talk to Essential Oils in Tasmania, for example, about how they could help them to market internationally. So they were really providing us with an understanding of what capacity their office has to assist local business to export goods or services, but we also raised with them, since they were there, the our relationship with I want to say Grootegast, but it's now West of Quartier, and the fact that we're having some reassessment and realignment of our sister city relationship, and ask whether they might be able to assist with a grant or something if, for example, if that relationship between Australia and the Netherlands is a really important one to DFAT, perhaps they'd like to fund us to run a program or two. So they were receptive to that, and I've emailed them just to follow up and see what response they've got for us on that. There are no other lights on. So we move on to the minutes of the Kingborough Access Advisory Committee. Councillor Rees, who you got? No. Councillor Midgley.
Oh, I think it was just good to see that they saw the footpath policy. Is that one on there? Yes, the footpath and dining policy. Just great that they had input into that.
Yeah. That's good. Okay, no other lights. The motion is moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Reet that the following information reports be noted: infrastructure works progress report, financial report for the period 1 July 2019 to 31 January 2020, Mayor's communications, minutes of the Kingborough Access Advisory Committee dated 12 February 2020. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. And next item is confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. The motion is that in accordance with the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulation 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, and General Manager's performance review. Would someone like to move and second that? Moved by Councillor Bastone, seconded by Councillor Westwood. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. The open session of Council adjourned at 7:42 p.m. and